Good evening and welcome to South Sudan in Focus on the Voice of America. I am John Tanza in Washington. Here are some of the stories we are covering today, Thursday, April 6, 2017. President Salva Kiir makes an appeal to his countrymen for donations to feed the hungry.
Charity begins at home. I appeal to every South Sudanese citizen to show the rest of the world our concern, our local effort and commitment to help famine-affected children, mothers, and the elderly by making financial contributions.
And a panel of experts in Washington talk about South Sudan's famine and propose cuts to foreign aid.
The United States has always been the moral conscience of the world. We're going to continue to express our values and continue to make sure we show that not just in our words, but in our actions.
We'll have these stories and more coming up on South Sudan in Focus. Four people were killed and 12 others injured during an attack on a convoy transporting internally displaced persons to Pibor earlier today. Sources in Juba, who did not want to be identified for fear of government retribution, told South Sudan in Focus that they heard sounds of heavy gunfire coming from the direction of the Juba-Bor road. The leader of the Cobra faction, Khalid Bothrus, is blaming government forces for attacking the convoy at Mohandisin Bridge. Bothrus says the attack was planned by South Sudan Army.
What happened in Juba is that there was a convoy of the IDPs from Merli tribe traveling from Juba to Pibor. And when they reached the Kubri Mohandisin on the eastern bank of the Nile, they were attacked by militias from the SPLA. They stormed a vehicle which was carrying women and children and elderly people. As a result, four people were killed and 12 others injured.
Several staff working for UN's Global Fund were ordered to leave the area where the attack took place. Bothrus says the wounded are now receiving medical treatment.
The wounded people are now in Juba Teaching Hospital, and the dead are in the mortuary in the hospital.
Bothrus says most of the people in the convoy were women and children returning to Pibor.
Actually, those were the IDPs who stayed in Juba for so long, and they were not given any assistance. But they took an advantage of 10 lorries of traders going to Pibor, so they joined them with an intention of going to Pibor.
The deputy spokesman for the South Sudan Army told South Sudan in Focus that he is not aware of the attack. Bothrus says the area where the attack occurred is under the control of government forces.
Kubri Mohandisin is located within Juba on the eastern bank of the Nile in Gumbo. This is something planned because that place is always guarded by the SPLA. There are no criminals who can attempt to come and attack people there. This is a plan of the government in Juba because the current famine is just a plan from the government to destroy the non-Dinkas.
Last month, unknown gunmen killed aid workers on the road from Juba to Pibor. Bothrus says the government is to blame for not providing security on that road.
The government in Juba should take the responsibility of this act because up to now, they are not able to protect civilians, even those under their control in Juba. See what is happening in Juba, and they continue to blame criminals. There are no criminals in that place.
South Sudan's Minister for Cabinet Affairs, Martin Elia Lomuro, said last month that the government will protect civilians and humanitarian workers working in the country. President Salva Kiir is asking the international community and South Sudanese nationals to donate money to help citizens who are starving to death. In a speech delivered today by his information minister, Mr. Kiir appealed to South Sudanese to turn up in large numbers for this Saturday's Great South Sudan Run, which was quickly organized to raise funds for people in famine-stricken areas. Waki Simon Wudu reports for VOA from Juba.
South Sudan Information Minister Michael Makuei emerged from a three-hour meeting held with President Kiir at the Presidential Palace, or J1, to read aloud Mr. Kiir's statement.
Charity begins at home. I appeal to every South Sudanese citizen to show the rest of the world our concern, our local effort and commitment to help famine-affected children, mothers, and the elderly by making financial contributions.
Organizers of the Great South Sudan Run, including Ethiopian athlete ISS Meteka, hope to raise tens of thousands of dollars to help feed hundreds of thousands of South Sudanese at risk of famine. Retired Ethiopian long-distance track and road running athlete Haile Gebrselassie will lead Saturday's event in Juba. Six athletes from Ethiopia and three others from Kenya will also take part in the event. President Kiir acknowledges that food shortages across the country are real and require national and international support to stop the spread of famine. But through his spokesman, he noted that natural disasters have contributed to the famine.
Parts of our states are struck by a combination of factors that have affected agriculture and hence food insecurity in our country. In addition to drought and flooding, physical insecurity due to the meaningless rebellion in our country has caused serious shortages of crop production.
President Kiir also admits the ongoing fighting has exposed a significant number of citizens to serious food shortages, according to Makuei. Three United Nations agencies declared famine in two counties of former Unity State, where an estimated 100,000 people have been affected. The UN warns the famine will spread unless immediate action is taken. About half of South Sudan's population is in need of food aid, according to UN officials. For VOA News, I'm Waki Simon Wudu in Juba.
A panel of experts and elected representatives gathered on Capitol Hill on Tuesday to discuss growing food insecurity across Africa and a looming famine. The discussion comes at a time when U.S. lawmakers are debating foreign aid budget cuts. Somali Services, Palestine Eman and Jafar Widwo attended the event, and Salim Solomon has this story.
Political and humanitarian leaders gathered on Capitol Hill Tuesday to call for action to prevent a looming humanitarian disaster in parts of Africa. The event was hosted by Representative Karen Bass, a Democrat of California, who said the U.S. needs to get off the sidelines and lead an international effort to help the estimated 20 million people in Africa and Yemen who are threatened with food insecurity.
This is what I perceive as the beginning of a campaign. This is not just an event where we all are educated and then we go off and do other things.
Bass and others have spoken against President Donald Trump's proposal to cut U.S. funding to the United Nations at the same time the organization is playing a lead role in addressing what may be the worst food crisis in 70 years. Bass has proposed a bill that would increase emergency funding by the U.S. Agency for International Development, USAID, by $100 million to deal with food shortages and famine in South Sudan.
I do believe that this is a very bipartisan issue, so I completely expect my Republican colleagues to support a relief effort as well.
U.S. Ambassador to the U.N. Nikki Haley was asked about Trump's proposal to cut U.N. funding on CBS's Face the Nation on Sunday and insisted that the U.S. does not plan to walk away from its historic role as a leader in aid.
The United States has always been the moral conscience of the world. We're going to continue to express our values and continue to make sure we show that not just in our words, but in our actions.
But Haley also said that the new administration plans to be more careful with funds and exercise more oversight in where its money goes and how it is spent.
We want to make sure that when food goes to an area, it's actually going to the people that need it. We want to make sure that there is no corruption on the ground. We want to make sure the governments are allowing that to go in. So when you talk about South Sudan, you have to talk about the fact that its government is not allowing us to take aid into that area.
Participants at the Tuesday event agreed that a large part of the crisis affecting Africa today is man-made. John Prendergast, a humanitarian activist and founding director of the Enough Project, said that in South Sudan, both sides of the conflict have used tactics designed at harming the food supply of their opponents. Worse still, once the crisis became apparent, they denied aid workers the right to operate, he said.
That combination of military attacks, specific kinds of military attacks against civilians, and then blocking and obstructing the humanitarian organizations from going into address the humanitarian needs of those people. That is why there's a famine today in South Sudan.
The UN now estimates that 40% of South Sudan's population, 4.9 million people, need food, agricultural, and nutritional assistance. The crisis has impacted people across the continent. In northeast Nigeria, an estimated 800,000 people need immediate food aid, according to the World Food Programme. Kip Ward, the former commander of U.S. Africa Command and the current president of Sentel Corporation, said this is also the result of tactics used by the terror group Boko Haram to sow chaos in society and cut off the population's access to food.
It's going on because of what Boko Haram has done to disrupt the societies, disrupt the peoples of the northeast part of Nigeria. And that famine has been exacerbated as the people are unable to farm their lands, unable to raise their livestock, and then unable to have access to markets and other locations. That has created the condition of famine and food insecurity in northern Nigeria.
Ward said the Nigerian government needs assistance to address this crisis.
The Nigerian government is doing a good job, but it does need the support of the international community to assist them with the resources, the foodstuffs, but also to help with some of the infrastructure requirements to have so that they can have access to some of these very remote locations.
Salem Solomon, Washington, D.C.
Palestine Iman and Jafar Fido of the VOA Somalia service contributed to that report. In Wau, internal displaced people sheltering at the Episcopal Church compound who fled violence in Juru River County recently are refusing to move to a new location 6 kilometers away because of insecurity in the area. The Wau town mayor has instructed aid agencies to stop feeding the IDPs at the church compound until they agree to relocate to a new camp. Michael Atit has more for VOA from Juba.
The IDPs fled their homes in Juru River County in February when violence broke out between cattle keepers from neighboring Tonji State and local farming community. 79-year-old Nyubolo Ugwak, who fled the fighting from Kwarjina area, says she is not ready to go to the new IDP shelter in Masna Talib because she fears she could be killed by an armed group operating there. Speaking in Arabic, Ugwak says during the fighting in February, her pregnant daughter-in-law lost her baby because she was traumatized by all the gunfire.
I have lost my grandchild during the incident. Houses were burned and many young people were killed. Members of an armed group there often come at night and attack people in the village and burn everything. God helped us to come to Wau. So now, what am I going to do in Masna? It is far from the town and there is no government there. If anything happens, who shall we go to?
Ugwak says she looks after 5 grandchildren and wants them to start attending school in Wau town. Wau town Mayor Mel Aleu Goch is insisting that IDPs should be relocated to the new site, saying the government will deploy security forces in the area to protect the IDPs. While speaking to representatives of humanitarian agencies in Wau town last week, Goch instructed them to suspend all food distribution until the IDPs agreed to be relocated.
Our role is to see to it that our people are safe and they have access to assist themselves rather than relying on UN, on food from organization. We want them also to assist themselves. We don't know, maybe tomorrow or after tomorrow, the peace will come. It will be easy for them to go back to their respective area.
Mayor Goch says the government wants to see the IDPs produce their own food at Masna Talib. Just last Saturday, eyewitnesses say an identified gunman attacked civilians in Masna Talib, killing 2 people and wounding 3 others. IDP Veronica Joseph, a mother of 6, says her husband was killed during the violence in February. Speaking in Arabic, Joseph says She wants to join the other IDPs sheltering at the UN-run protection of civilian site rather than relocate to Masnat Alip.
I am a widow taking care of 6 children, and I don't work anywhere. So the only way to help us is to be close to the government. Many of us here don't have anything to eat, and some might even die in the coming days because we are staying in an open place. How do they expect us to survive in the new camp?
Stephen Robo Musa, the head of the local NGO Community Empowerment for Progress organization in Wau, says denying IDPs food is not a solution, and it will only increase the vulnerability of the community. Speaking by phone from Wau, Musa says government officials should talk to the IDPs rather than forcing them to relocate to an area where they are not comfortable in.
Let the process of dialogue go on and encouragement be done and insurance their safety, so that at least they feel that we are sure when we go, nothing will happen to us. Then totally to reach a level that's okay. They should not be given food until the process is done.
Officials of the NGO ACTIT, which engages South Sudanese community in agro-pastoral field activities to alleviate hunger, is providing emergency relief to the IDPs sheltering at the Episcopal Church compound in Wau. However, they did not respond to our repeated calls. The IDPs say 2 children died of hunger in the camp this week. Mayor Goch says he has yet to verify that information from the medical sources at Wau Teaching Hospital. For VOA News, I am Michael Atit in Juba.
You are tuned to South Sudan in Focus from the Voice of America. Coming up, South Sudanese students in Zimbabwe say they are stranded. Find out why when we come back after this break.
What do you think? People speak out on important questions. The question today:
what motivates you to be successful?
I have a family, yeah. I have my daughter, my relatives, my parents. They depend on me. That's why I have to work very hard to support them, to help them.
Successful people motivate me to be successful. If I look at people like the businessmen, like Bitature in Uganda, if I look at businessmen in the world like Bill Gates, such successful people really motivate me to also work hard and become successful.
What matters with being successful? I want to make my mark, and I do not want to say I've taken a path that many have taken. I want to walk a road. I want to create my own path.
What do you think? A daily discussion of important questions from VOA.
For in-depth news and analysis on events in South Sudan, tune in to South Sudan in Focus, Monday through Friday from 1630 to 1700 UTC. We are also on the web at www.voanews.com/South Sudan or download our podcast on iTunes. That's South Sudan in Focus on VOA Africa.
You are tuned to South Sudan in Focus. South Sudanese students on government scholarships to study at various universities across Zimbabwe are stranded at the South Sudan Embassy in Harare. As INBO reports, 29 students say they were prevented from attending classes a week ago for not paying tuition fees.
25-year-old Kir Salfa is in his second year at Harare Institute of Technology, earning his bachelor's in biotechnology. He is one of 29 students at the school on a 4-year scholarship provided by the government in Juba. His school fees and accommodations were supposed to be paid in full by the South Sudanese government, but a week ago, he and the other students were discharged from the university because their tuitions were not paid. The school's administration sent them a letter with a simple message.
If there is no payment, there is no way the student should be allowed back to the school.
With final exams just a few weeks away, the administration told the students they could no longer attend classes until their school fees, which total more than $240,000, were paid. The deadline to pay was March 31st. When the government did not meet that deadline, the students were promptly kicked out of the university. They say they have nowhere to go. Their only choice was the South Sudan Embassy in Harare, where they have been living for the past few days. Kaniko Bangoye Michael, a 23-year-old studying electronic commerce at the university, says being camped out at the South Sudan embassy isn't easy.
The embassy is so small. Students are just sleeping around the compound under the trees because we are not given rooms. These are offices of which we can't afford to be sleeping. So we are just sleeping outside, covering ourselves.
There's a total of 147 South Sudanese spread across four universities in Zimbabwe under the same South Sudan-sponsored scholarship program, according to the students in Harare. They say the government has not paid their fees either, and they expect the others to make their way to the embassy in the coming days and weeks. 25-year-old Aguirre Mariel, who is studying electronic engineering, says the embassy is already struggling to host the 29 students.
Me, personally, I have been sleeping in a sofa chair in the reception room. So I think I spent like 5 days in that chair sleeping somehow.
Mariel says it is more than just a financial shock. There's also the emotional toll the situation has taken on the students. He now questions his future.
Actually, it's heartbreaking because when you realize that you are doing something and at some point you have been stopped and you have no hope that you'll be continuing. We have actually spent like 2 years already in the university. So we are almost to the last part of our courses.
Rebecca Achok, who is studying biotechnology and one of five women in the group, says she wants the school fees to be paid in time so that she can take her upcoming examination and eventually contribute to the development of her country.
If they can really see South Sudan is going to be one of the most beautiful countries that people love to be in, they should at least do something or help. But it's still, our government, the response is still not that sure. That is, they're going to take us back or they're going to pay our school fees.
Salfa says if the president does not keep his promise and pay for their school fees, it is the government and the people of his home country that will ultimately suffer.
As we are here, we are doing all the sciences with new technology, so it could have been an advantage for the country if possible so that they can utilize the human investment that we have got from Zimbabwe. The only service that I could offer to my people is through after getting my degree. If I get the degree today, then this is the same very degree that will be able to uplift the upcoming generation.
The students say the South Sudanese ambassador to Zimbabwe, as well as the cultural attaché, are trying to urge their government to pay the fees promptly.
We are kind of in a situation in which we can't control by ourselves. Trying to coordinate back home so that the government should be able to look into our issue as fast as possible. But currently, communications are going on, but they haven't assured us of any assistance or help in the situation going on. They should look into our issue.
Bangoya says students like himself are the future of South Sudan, and the government must look into the issue. An email and phone call request for comment to the Harare Institute of Technology have gone unanswered. The government of South Sudan did not return our request for comment either. Ayan Bior, VOA News, Washington.
The national dialogue President Salva Kiir announced last year has not materialized, even though the president said it would begin in early March. A member of the National Dialogue Steering Committee, appointed 3 months ago, says the members of the committee have yet to be sworn in. A presidential spokesman, Atenyweka Ateny, says Juba does not have the money to organize the event. Tito Justin has the story for VOA from Juba.
The South Sudan National Dialogue President Salva Kiir initiated in December was supposed to start more than a month ago, but nothing has been scheduled. His steering committee member Joseph Okelo says he and other committee members are waiting to hear from Mr. Kiir when they should begin their work.
We have always been hearing from the president and that the national dialogue arrangements are underway. Our names have been announced, but we have not been called by the president to be sworn in as members of the committee. And therefore, I'm still waiting to hear when this will take place.
Earlier this year, government officials said the steering committee would come up with a budget and draft a plan to start the process. Presidential spokesman Atenyweka Ateny says the government lacks the money to organize the dialogue.
The money has not yet been put in place by the Minister of Finance for the national dialogue. And the situation remains as I talked to you last time. There's nothing new on it.
President Kiir earlier nominated local think tank the Sud Institute as a focal point for the secretariat of the dialogue. Abraham Awolich, a senior police analyst at the Sud Institute, says time is running out and the national dialogue needs to start soon. He says the government should put in place a number of structures so that people across the political spectrum participate in the process. Awolich suggests the government consider how decisions are made at the dialogue so it can proceed peacefully.
And so when we launch, it is not the beginning of the dialogue, but then the beginning of the process of consolidating the dialogue and developing the agenda and identifying stakeholders and getting them to agree on the agenda itself. So it is going to be a laborious process. That is why we think that it should start so that we can take time to put all these things in place.
He says South Sudanese are eager to hear from the government about what's happening with the dialogue and wonder why it's taking so long after the president made his announcement.
The people of South Sudan are waiting. This is something that they think could rescue the country and end the crisis the country is undergoing right now.
Last month, South Sudan government spokesman Michael Makwe set preconditions for the armed opposition and people in opposition-held areas of the country to first renounce rebellion before being allowed to participate in the event. Church leaders, opposition politicians, and civil society activists criticized the preconditions, warning the dialogue would fail if the government continues to insist on such preconditions. For VOA News, I am Tito Justin in Juba.
That report by Tito Justin from Juba brings us to the end of our show for this Thursday. We now leave you with the song Mamoria by JJD Muzika. Evangelio and Mamoria. Seida. Malujede. Habibi, isimu Seida. Isimu Sukeri wa usajemi. Hiya jamani igeni kijuba muhabatani na bada vitarabani. Itakanze mila na Seida. We have been listening to that love song by JJD Muzika. The title is Mamuria. I am John Tanza in Washington. Thanks for listening. Join us again tomorrow evening for another edition of South Sudan in Focus from the Voice of America. Seida, Seida, beg you, Jenna can be rava. Bidun Abu Bidun.